Hi, this is Jim from Safety Wars. Before we start the program, I want to make sure everyone understands that we often talk about OSHA and EPA citations, along with some other regulatory actions from other agencies, legal cases, and criminal activity. Everyone is innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. Proposed fines are exactly that, and they are often litigated, reduced, or vacated. We use available public records, news accounts, and press releases. We cannot warranty or guarantee the details of any of the stories we share, since we are not directly involved with these stories, at least not most of the time. Enjoy the show.
This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
And from the border of liberty and prosperity. Actually, that's not true. We're deep in FEMA, EPA, and OSHA Region 3. Yes, that's all. That's only the only specific I'm going to give. So I want to thank everybody out there for listening. We've had some of our biggest programs this year, pretty much. Pretty good. Now, just when you think you're not making an impact, you're making an impact. Well, Jim, what do you mean? What do you mean? Well, you know, we'll just leave it at that. People are watching. People are listening. No, choosing it. No, we're on X. We're on Rumble. We're on YouTube. Rumble and Brighteon are two platforms that we, and Odyssey occasionally, are three platforms that we do afterwards.
Right.
So we'll load them afterwards, ex post facto. So, Monday, I have a killer commute to where I need to be for project work. So, what happens is there's no possible way I'm going to be able to be on the air Monday night and be cognizant of what the hell's going on. So, that's why Monday, usually, you know, maybe I should do a replay. I don't know. Probably should do a replay. But it's like, you know, I ain't going to be a live show. What else is going on? A lot going on here today. A lot of news. And we're just going to go right off with it. We have some sponsors that we're going to start tomorrow. Actually, May 1st. We're going to have some sponsors here. And we're just going to go with it. And you, too, could be a sponsor. Give me a call at 845-269-5772. We're looking at having a call-in section of the program. You could call in with your safety questions, or I'll read them on the air. If you're interested in having your safety questions right on the air, give me a call. Or text me is probably best, 845-269-5772. I get enough spam on there, you know, it doesn't really make any difference. It's always the same person calling. Too, it's like the freakiest thing. I was getting scammed by someone on the phone, and I was able. I put a little research. I found out who they were and where they were calling from. That was a very interesting conversation when I called them back, and that's what's going on, guys. So where are we here? I mean, now we have wars and rumors of wars. Here, as it says in the Bible, we also have, you know, we have people threatening war. So today, here, let's get the war news right off the bat here. So let's do that. Okay, where's our war news? We haven't had that sound effect lately. Yes. So here we go. Studies, we have a couple of stories here. Russia threatens NATO with a nuclear strike. This is from the UK Telegraph. Russian forces are trying to create a buffer zone in Ukraine's northeastern Sumy region, its regional governor claimed. Four border villages are now in the gray zone due to Russian attacks. Hirohev, referring to an area of the battlefield that neither side fully controls. Currently, the enemy continues to try to carve out a buffer zone on the territory of our region, but has not had any significant success, Ole says. I can't pronounce that last name. Kiev was warned for months that Moscow's troops are trying to advance into the Sumy from Russia's neighboring Kursk and Belgorod regions. Analysts have confirmed recent advances should come along with an intensified aerial bombardment of cities. Right, so Russia carving out buffer zone in northern Ukraine. And here we go. Boom, boom, boom. British blood, right, must be spilled. Okay, let's go on. So let's see. Yeah, I mean, you know, they're calling for nuclear stuff. No, and our friends in Finland on this show, I mean, we got a huge following in Finland because in Finland they're preparing for nuclear war. They were told be prepared. So our September shows were downloaded heavily a couple of months back. Vladimir Putin's propaganda machine has accused Britain of providing explosives used in a series of high-profile assassinations inside of Russia, and warned that British blood must be spilled in retaliation. The extraordinary claim was made on state-controlled Russian television, where the Kremlin mouthpieces directly blamed the UK security divisions, UK security services, for the deaths of several senior military figures. Love them or hate them, Trump told Zelensky, you know, you're gambling with World War III here. I mean, that's been played over and over again in the last couple of days. World War III is not good at all. Believe me, you can't win that one so easy. Cause of Spain power outage still unclear after mass blackout and travel chaos. This is from the Washington Post, story by Adrian Blanco Ramos and two others. Life in Spain and Portugal began to return to normal Tuesday, a day after a massive power outage paralyzed the Iberian Peninsula, leaving governments, companies, and experts scrambling to figure out what went wrong. As questions build, it may take weeks before the blackout's cause is clear. This cannot happen again, Spanish Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez said Tuesday, the largest blackout in Spain's history. We will take the necessary measures to prevent this from happening again and hold private operators accountable. Red Eléctrica, the corporation that operates Spain's electric grid, ruled out a cyber attack, human error, and unusual weather or atmospheric phenomenon. Eduardo Prieto, head of the operations services at Red Eléctrica, said the two disconnection events occurred just a second apart shortly before Monday's blackout. So what they're calling this sabotage, I know this much. We cannot, especially in the United States, as the average citizen, the government has proven ineffective at preventing this stuff. Yeah, they got controls, and yeah, they're getting better. But, dude, I mean, in northern New Jersey, southern New York, it's like we're out of, and these are, you know, outside of metropolitan areas, constant power outages. So I'm going to tell everybody, go out as you're able to and figure out how you're going to increase your capacity and also reduce your usage at the same time. Well, Jim, what do you mean reduce your usage? We got all this electronics. Well, we went out and we got some generators and we got batteries, right? Whether they're smaller batteries for the cell phones and iPads or I think they'll power a computer. And this is how we built capacity and also had energy-efficient lighting and things of that nature. Reduce the use. So now we could easily use this other stuff. That's one of those. And we also have an old-fashioned TV antenna now. So we're able to receive communications here. Yes, we still have, apps and everything, the internet we watch. No streaming services, but guess what? Peace of mind, we got an old-fashioned TV antenna. But Now, what's my point here? You got to prepare yourself for all of this stuff. You can't rely on the government here because you can't. Look at, you know, would you? You know, yeah, they've done good things. I don't want to be all negative. Well, they can't do anything. There's some commentators out there screaming in the other. Well, the government cannot do anything right. Well, that's not true. They address that. They're on overload. Here we have, in Spain, the entire country out, pretty much, with all the major ones, major stuff, right, out, right? Rail transport systems, airports, and I'm sure a lot of other things. I don't know. What are you going to do, right? What are you going to do? Here we have Nevada OSHA heat illness regulation approved. Heat illness regulation adopted in, oh, I can share a screen on this one, which means we may get an echo. Let's see. Will we get an echo? Okay, here we go. Heat illness regulation adopted in the Division of Industrial Relations, DIR, has been filed with the Nevada Secretary of State and is now in effect. The new regulation provides flexibility for each business to evaluate workplace hazards associated with heat to develop and implement a plan that addresses their specific needs. According to the Division of Industrial Relations Administrator Victoria Carrion, approval of this regulation is a critical step to reduce the health risks of heat exposure for Nevada workers in indoor and outdoor settings. This regulation is the culmination of 4 years of discussion and engagement with various stakeholders to develop a framework that works for Nevada's workers and employers. Developing a Nevada specific regulatory framework has been the priority of the division due to the workplace hazards inherent in Nevada's increasingly hot climate. We're going to be talking about the climate change here in a few minutes. Heat-related complaints to Nevada's Occupational Health and Safety Administration have grown exponentially after seeing a dramatic increase in complaints submitted in 2021. So what are the requirements here? The approved regulation requires businesses with more than 10 employees to implement the following measures. A job hazard analysis. The analysis is limited to job classifications where the majority of employees have occupational exposure to heat illness for more than 30 minutes and of any 60-minute period excluding breaks. It requires a written safety program. With that, emergency procedures, training. Right, there's an exemption for climate-controlled environments, I'm assuming air conditioning, and collective bargaining agreements may exceed those requirements. Very frustrating, all of this stuff. Very frustrating that we are, it's 2025 and we're still doing this crap. It really is. Well, some say, well, it's great. I'm sorry. How are you treating your employees if you're not even going to be giving them heat stress stuff? So managing their heat stress and training and everything. It seems like a simple thing. This is what I normally, I get a phone call, or actually this is a number of years ago. I'm guys on the Little League field. Jim, I have a problem, safety problem. Okay, what's the safety problem? Well, I got a bill from the hospital because one of my guys went to the hospital and all they did was give him some water. I said, okay, tell me more, what's going on? Well, the idiots didn't drink enough water during the day, so they called 911 on one guy who was really hot. I said, well, that was probably a prudent thing to do if they don't know how to manage that. The guy's showing extreme, had an extreme, an extreme reaction to it. I'm getting text messages. My daughter's softball team won tonight. the New City Seminoles. But they're what's the issue? Well, they're sending me. I have all these villas. Well, you have workers' comp, don't you? Yeah. But I'm going to run it through there, and it's going to be a lot of money. Blah blah blah. The guys are idiots. I said, well, 6 months ago, didn't I offer you first aid CPR training where we would have went over heat stress and how to manage emergencies and things, because that's what we do here. As safety wars, that's the advantage of having a safety wars do your training. He says, oh, yeah. I said, well, I tell you what, your training would have been less than what they're charging at the hospital for this, and that what your workers' comp is going to be doing. Always obey the law, use workers' comp, right? This is an occupational injury. Oh, I'm going to do it under the table. Well, do whatever you want. Obey the law. Why would we want to obey the law? Right? But no, it's like this. It's cheaper to manage these things than it is to react to these things. It should be a simple cost-benefit analysis. You get out there and you get the employers not wanting to get their employees a bottle of water here, right? I can't afford a $6 case of water a day. I can't do that. Well, dude, can you afford that? Right. So, you know, can you afford the funeral? Right. Oh, you can't afford the water, but you can afford the funeral. You can't afford safety professionals to help you manage things, but you can afford everything else. You're willing to give OSHA money, insurance companies money, payoffs, breaking the law. You're willing to do everything. God forbid you should hire a qualified safety person. Now, that's my rant for the day. The guy, James McPherson, before me, was really giving the big rant there. Holy crap. Wow. On that Safety FM network. That was one hell of a rant. Right? Got to get him here. Maybe we can rant together. All right. All right. So, and there is a death here, right? Alexis Herman, the first Black Secretary of Labor, is dead at 77. Right? Alexis Herman, a Democratic Party insider who grew up under segregation in Alabama and went on to become the first Black Secretary of Labor, a position which he helped settle a crippling strike by UPS workers, died on Friday in Washington. She was 77. Her death after a brief illness was announced by her family. The announcement did not say where in Washington she died. If I had to guess, she probably died in bed, right? Because beds are so dangerous, I guess. President Bill Clinton was familiar with Miss Herman when he nominated her as Labor Secretary in his second term. She had been the chief executive of the 1992 Democratic National Convention, deputy director of Mr. Clinton's transition team after he won the 1992 presidential election, and the White House public liaison during his first term. When he nominated her for a Labor Secretary, President Clinton referred to her work at the Office of Public Liaison, a grassroots organizer of support for administration policies. She has been my eyes and ears working to connect the American people, businesses, and labor individuals and communities with their government. Well, rest in peace there. I remember the UPS strike. It was mind-blowing. What was funny was Hess Oil was still in business, the terminal end, and they were collecting gasoline samples from the Binghamton, New York facility and sending them to Woodbridge, New Jersey. And I was, and I remember distinctly, I was in the FedEx where they were overnighting these things. Lots of paperwork. The sent out laboratory samples that you knew that were probably hazardous materials. So rather than the UPS, they were going to FedEx. And I said, dude, I could drive them down there for a nominal fee because that's where I'm going is Woodbridge from Binghamton, New York. The guy said, looked at me like I was nuts. I can't do that. You know, I don't have a contract. I said, okay. And what happened was FedEx had a limit of like one package per person. And this guy comes in there, strolling in there with three freaking coolers. So he ended up going and driving to Woodbridge. I mean, we could have carpooled, I guess, you know. Anyway, I know they wouldn't have done that insurance stuff, right? Liability. Okay. Maryland's Occupational Safety and Health Agency, MOSH. Now, someone's as good as Signifors, right? MOM, right? Signifors, OSHA. Maryland's Occupational Safety and Health Agency, MOM, MOSH, has released its full report on the death of the sanitation worker, right? Right? It explains why no financial penalty was ever imposed against the city. Oh, that sovereign immunity strikes again. According to the state medical examiner, Silver experienced extreme heat exhaustion while collecting trash last summer during a dangerous triple-digit heat wave. Witnesses and coworkers also claim his repeated pleas for help went ignored in part due to an abusive work culture within Baltimore City's Department of Public Works. Oh, yeah, we went into this. We ran, right? The culmination of that should not be in a two-page Marin of Facts citation with $0 penalty. This is not accountability, said the attorney representing the family. Yeah, I remember we read this entire report on air, so this is a follow-up. You're just mind-blowing here with this. You know, I don't know. I should revisit that and make a whole thing here. You know what? I'm going to bookmark this. Hang on here, folks. No, it's just ridiculous. We're just not going to, right? Yeah. Now, there are multiple things that went on here, if you recall. But now what is frustrating is that nobody, falls upon deaf ears. There's a attitude among a lot of public employee workers that they're not responsible for shit. The way it is, right? We go into this regularly, with this here. It doesn't matter what level they are. So here we have an employee from a company that was working at the Cayuga Museum of History and Art who was killed on the job while using a cutoff saw to cut granite curbs, right? The company located in Phoenix, New York, I'm not mentioning the name of the company, paid a $4,469 fine for failing to provide a safe workplace. That sounds like a general duty clause issue, and a separate fine of for respirable crystalline silica at the work site. Let's go into the inspection detail here. I'm going to share that. Hold on, folks. Right, if it's a government document, I share it, right, with that. That way I don't get into trouble, too much trouble. So here we have the name of the company. Closing conference was November 1st. So let's see, November 1st, we have December, January, February, March, and now April, 5 months, right, now, into this. So here we have, they issued everything in March. So this was, come on. So this is a general duty clause violation here. All right. With this. All right. So that was $4,468. Right, and they did not, appears to me that they did not negotiate this down. Hold on, yeah, 7,800 down to 49. Yeah, they got a little bit off here. I'm not going to do the math. Here we have four. Each employee engaged in the tasks identified in Table 1 did not implement engineering controls. This was under the, there was a failure to abate inspection. As a respirable crystalline silica, and they have another one here, respirable crystalline silica, and the other three. Now that were zero. I mean, you know, it's very frustrating. I get it. Very frustrating. These are de minimis fines here for these folks here. And again, it's accountability here. Now, real quick here. Los Angeles County approves a $4 billion payout to settle sexual abuse claims at juvenile facilities. Again, no, and this is 7,000 claims of sexual abuse at juvenile facilities since 1959, allegedly. The agreement on April 4th, far surpasses the $2.6 billion settlement reached in 2022 with the Boy Scouts of America. Now, here's what I'm going to say. Now, everyone knows here on the air, I'm involved in scouting. I had a conversation with one of the fathers who was trying to get a sponsor, right? And he said, we can't sponsor the Boy Scouts. They had that sexual abuse settlement, blah, blah, blah. Okay, here's my question to people like that. Well, L.A., $4 billion, right, payout with this. Are we going to hold L.A. County, who has a history of not giving a shit about anything? Well, what do you mean, Jim? Well, we went to a whole series of fire, on the fires in L.A. Oh, yeah, everything's fine. Police chief, fire chief said, we don't have enough firehouses. We don't have enough resources. We don't have enough budget. We need to... Ah, everything's fine. No problem. Those people never held responsible. You know, blah, blah, blah. Whole of L.A. Now we have a situation here. They had a $4 billion payout to settle sexual abuse claims. Okay, why don't we start naming names here? Who the hell did this? 59 years, there are no names? There are no names. Nobody knows. Who the hell are these people who did this? We'll just write out a check. It's fine. No problem. Are you freaking kidding me? So my question is this. We're that hard on Boy Scouts America. Why aren't we that bad on L.A. County? That's my question. Up in Rockland County, my own county, there's allegations at a former state facility that closed down. Over in Stony Point, all different types of allegations. And they got the Code of Omerta, the Code of Silence going on over there. You know? How many of these other facilities and schools are, and nobody knows anything. Nobody know. Oh, what do we know? No problem. This is along the lines of in the workplace when the roles reverse. Well, we couldn't have ever known about that hazard that somebody hurt themselves. How are we to know? Really? How about constructive knowledge? Right? Maybe you should have known. That's what we hear in the workplace. Why does the government get off with this, these state governments, with these heinous acts of child sexual abuse? Why, where the hell are the 300,000 children out there, as reported by the AP, that went missing here? We know what the game is, what the thing is. Pedophilia, slave labor, then organ donation. Right, yeah, that's what happens with them. We get all upset over the TV show Handmaid's Tale. Well, right, and that's a freaking TV show. What about what happens out there in real life? Did you ever think about that? Why aren't we getting upset over that? Why? Because these are our friends and our neighbors and okay, great. Wonderful, right? So let's go to commercial break, and we'll come back to you.
Safety Wars is streaming now. SafetyFM.com.
In the professional safety community, communication and planning are just a few keys to your program's success. The question many practitioners have is, where do I start? Dr. Jay Allen, the creator of the Safety FM platform and host of the Rated R Safety Show, has built a global foundation to help you along the way. Go to safetyfm.com and listen to some of the industry's best and most involved professionals, including Blaine Hoffman with the Safety Pro, Sam Goodman with the Hop Nerd, Sheldon Primus with the Safety Consultant, Jim Pozell with Safety Wars, Emily Elrod with Unapologetically Bold, and many others. As individuals, we can do great things, but as a team, we become amazing. Dial into safetyfm.com today and surround yourself with a powerful force of knowledge and support.
OSHA recordables, catastrophic losses, environmental disasters. You want answers? So do I. This is Jim Pozell with Safety Wars.
That's my daddy.
So we're going to talk about, and this, for whatever reason, came across my feed today, right? The report's from 2003, but for whatever reason, it came across the my thing, right? So why, I have no idea today. So this is from climategov.org, right? So and we're going to go over this here. Let's do a share screen. All right, so I think we all now, if you've been a long-time listener, you know I did a lot of my graduate school work on specifically climate change, reporting on climate change, and is it accurate in the news? And what I did was I compared what the news reports are saying versus what the actual reports said. And what we found, what did we find out? We concluded that what we call fake news, right? I was 13 years ahead of the game on there with that. Front matter, what is it about this report? Right, the global climate change. I'm winning good. Right, I'm doing good. The Global Change Research Act of 1990 mandates that the U.S. Global Change Research Program deliver a report to Congress and the President not less than frequently than every 4 years that integrates, evaluates, and interprets the findings of the program, discusses the scientific uncertainties associated with such findings, analyzes the effects of global climate change on the natural environment, agriculture, energy production, and use, land and water resources, transportation, human health, and welfare, human social systems, biological diversity, and analyzes current trends in climate change, both human-induced and natural, the project's major trends for the subsequent 25 to 100 years. And basically, this report came out, right, with that, right? So, it's about guide to the report. So they have the overview chapter presents the major findings in the report alongside highlights drawn from across NCA5, whatever that is. The chapter provides a synthesis of material from the underlying report chapters. The physical science chapters, the climate trends and earth system process chapters, goes into national topic chapters and regional chapters here. So I guess divided everything up. Northeast, Midwest, Southwest, South Global Plains, Southwest, Northern Great Plains, and Northwest. Right? And confidence and likelihood. Evaluating confidence and likelihood is a key part of the assessment process. As in previous assessments, NCA 5 uses specific terms to convey information about scientific confidence and certainty associated with important findings, observations, and projections. Chapter authors use a range of calibrated terms adopted from the IPCC Fifth Assessment Report to describe levels of confidence and, where appropriate, the assessment of likelihood associated. So this is like your hazard matrix table sort of thing. So confidence in a finding is based on the type, amount, quality, strength, and consistency of evidence, the skill, range, and consistency of methods to detect, evaluate, attribute, and interpret climate trends, and the degree of agreement across scientific information sources. The likelihood of a finding is based on measures of certainty expressed in probabilistically, in other words, based on statistical analysis of observed or projected results, or on the author's expert judgment based on their assessment across scientific information sources. So this is always the debate when it comes back to this, going back ad nauseum, is confidence and likelihood here, right, with that. And again, you know, I am balanced here. So let's see here. The overview. Here we are watching all of, there's like 30 sections here, right? With the adoptions, you know, of course, so COVID-19 versus supply chains and a lot of stuff here. Why do we go over this? Why? Because we're supposed to be educated here. And believe it or not, climate change is on a topic on a lot of standardized tests in the environmental field, as you can imagine, one of them being the Certified Hazardous Material Managers exam. Climate change was part of the body of knowledge. Did I get any questions on it? Yeah, I did on some of the stuff. All right, so here we go with the how the United States is addressing climate change. Again, this is 2023 during the Biden administration. The effects of human-caused climate change are already far-reaching, worsening across every region in the United States. Rapidly reducing greenhouse gas emissions can limit future warming and associated increases in many risks across countries' efforts to adapt the thing. However, without deeper cuts in net global greenhouse gas emissions and accelerated adaption efforts, severe climate risks in the United States will continue to grow. Right, future climate change, right? The more climate warms, and we're going to be commenting on some of this without, no, we're going to be doing the overview here in large part. The more the planet warms, the greater its impacts. Without rapid and deep reductions in global greenhouse gas emissions from human activities, the risk of accelerating sea rise, intensifying extreme weather, and other harmful climate impacts will continue to grow. Each additional increment of warming is expected to lead to more damage and greater economic losses compared to previous increments of warming, while the risk of catastrophic or unforeseen consequences increases. However, this also means that each increment of warming that the world avoids through actions that cut emissions, remove CO2 from the atmosphere, reduces the risks here. So, here, what do we have? Let's zoom in a little. Climate change is happening now in all regions in the U.S. Right? Without deeper cuts in global net emissions, again, focus on global. The rest of the USA are going to continue to grow. Climate change presents risks, while action to limit warming and reduce risk presents opportunities for the U.S., going on, and it mentions increasing temperatures. U.S. emissions have decreased while the economy and population have grown. Annual U.S. greenhouse gas emissions fell 12% between 2005 and 2019. This trend was largely driven by changes in electricity generation. Coal use has declined while the use of natural gas renewable technologies has increased. Let's remember, Biden administration wanted to eliminate natural gas, and states like New York are eliminating natural gas from household appliances. Right? So, was this good or bad? I don't know. That's one of the questions. Since 2017, the transportation sector has overtaken electricity generation as the largest emitter. Yeah, let's address this slightly. Here, hold on. All right. A 40% drop in emissions from the electric, right? So we can have been dropping emissions. Zero emissions have declined from their peak in 2007. The country has seen sustained reductions in the amount of energy required for a given quality of economic activity. All right? So I guess that's good. All right? And here you have the historical trends. You see everything going down, right? Capacity going up. Right? Accelerating advances in adaptation can reduce rising climate risks. As more people face severe climate impacts, individuals, organizations, companies, communities, and governments are taking advantage of adaption opportunities that reduce risk. All right, so what are the things, right? And now my argument is this. Sea level has been rising and climate has been changing for for eons here. Oceans been rising for millennia, right? Being counteracted by the rising of land because you're releasing glacial weight, and that takes a lot of time for the land to rise. Plus, you have with the climate change, right? Water coming up. It's been going on for a long time. If you live in South Jersey or around the Woodbridge, New Jersey area, the glacier ended in Perth Amboy, the old capital of New Jersey, and also in the Keysby section of Woodbridge and Staten Island, New York. That's where the last glaciation ended. Well, guess what? There has been a glacier there for about 10,000 years. So the question always comes to, okay, how are we impacting this with this? And again, here we have in 2023, actions include nature-based solutions such as restoring coastal wetlands or oyster reefs, right? Upgrading stormwater infrastructure to account for heavier rainfall. I'm going to say possibly heavier rainfall. Applying innovative agricultural practices. Assessing climate risks to roads and public transit. Okay. And it's going to happen anyway, climate change, man-made or not. So, okay, that's a good thing. Now, let's say that you're in California. Managing vegetation to reduce wildfire risk. Nice. California, with all those responsible people in L.A., did they do that? It's a government report that was issued 2 years ago. No, we don't have to do anything. Right? Develop urban heat plans to reduce health risks from extreme heat. OSHA, they did that through OSHA, planning relocation of high-risk coastal areas. That's an ongoing process, right? They're using mostly financial pressure. If you're from my hometown of Woodbridge, New Jersey, from Superstorm Sandy, they condemned a lot of areas, also down in South Jersey and over in Perth Amboy, the old Hess facility there. They had to condemn, and right, another company bought it, and then they ended up condemning it after that, and now there's going to be other work done there, I've got word. Climate action has increased in every region in the U.S., right? Adapts, efforts to adapt to climate change, reduce net greenhouse gases are underway in every region here. I remember this 2023. And it gives specific examples here. Let's see, what anything in California? Northeast, Midwest, Northern Greenfield. South Greenfield, Northwest, Southwest. No cutting emissions. Okay, well, you know, and it's like this. Why do they focus on cutting emissions and not redoing infrastructure? More money in cutting stuff. It's an easy thing. Oh, we're going to cut emissions. We're going to cut emissions. The hard part is improving infrastructure. So cutting emissions, we could do that. No hierarchy of controls sort of thing, right? We're going to cut emissions. We're going to pass a law. It'll be fine. No problem. Versus going out there and getting your hands dirty, right? With that. And again, we had Lord Moncton here who said this is all baloney, basically, who ran the numbers himself. Harmful impacts in the near term. So let's see here. I think in nice graphs here of what might happen. So this is what it comes down to. We could do all this stuff. I'm of the Bjorn and Lomborg, right? Homes and property, right? At risk. I'm with the Bjorn and Lomborg thing where there's nothing we could do here in the near term except, well, we need better urban planning and preparation for disasters with this. Right? Impacts the world air quality. No, and this is what I wanted to go into. There are other reports out there. There are other points of views here. Future warming. So they give you a thing here, right? Future warming in the United States, a graph, will depend on the total amount of global greenhouse gas emissions. So here we have, no matter what, temperature is going to go up. So now we're going to spend all these millions and billions and trillions of dollars, give up a lot of civil rights here. Civil rights like what kind of car do I want to drive, things of that nature. Am I going to drive a car? They've done a pretty good job with this generation of getting them not to drive anymore. More and more kids are getting Ubers to work. Right, young workers, or they're walking, or they have the electric bicycles, and they're not driving, right? A lot of that going on. So they're it's working, the plan. Well, that was the long-term plan anyway, in my opinion. Going back decades here. But no matter what, we're going to be spending trillions of dollars. And remember, it's all going to be focused on the United States here. And we're still going to get warming. We're not going to be able to mitigate this. That's a hard ask to ask anybody here. One commentator a number of years ago said that this global warming policy was one of some of the biggest scams because it'll take 100 years to prove them wrong. I know the impacts. You have to have a lot of faith in these researchers to do this, with that. You get the whole public choice theory thing, which we talked about here. Or basically, whoever is paying for it, that's the viewpoint you're going to get. And a lot of this stuff, the numbers is just not there. How climate action can create a more resilient and just nation? Anytime you hear just nation and just, communists behind it, socialists behind it, a lot of times. Right, they want to go and, right, so here you go. Large near-term cuts in greenhouse gas emissions are achievable through many currently available cost-effective mitigation options, which the EPA talked about here. However, reaching net zero emissions by mid-century cannot be achieved without exploring additional mitigation options. Even though if the world decarbonizes rapidly, the nation will continue to face climate impacts and risks adequately and equitably. Right? Oh, got to be equitable, right, with everything. Addressing these risks involves long-term inclusive planning, investments in transformative adaptation and mitigation approaches that consider equity and justice. Right? Okay, how do we define that? And no, it goes on and on and on. Now you understand, no, but with the last 2 minutes here, why people, no, code word, equity. Really? You want equity? Why, right? There's never going to have an equitable outcome on anything. Equity means the end result, everyone's equal. Do you really want that? Everybody equal? Equal under the law, where you have civil rights, of course. But you want everybody to be equal, equity? That means that, now, they almost killed the pilgrims in this country. That's what they wanted, it was equity, right? We're all going to have equal. It's going to be equitable. And then what happens? You get a lot of folks that, oh, well, hell, I don't have to do anything. It's an issue here. It's an issue. Let's go to commercial break here. And we will, let's see if they'll let me play music. Let's see, hold on. We have the Route 80 song here. Da-da-da. You know what? Yeah, let's fire up the Route 80 song here. Let's see if they let us do that here. Because we have some Route 80 news. Hold on, where is it?
You can safely operate a multi-ton vehicle while texting. Behind the wheel is no place to multitask.
Okay, for some reason we are not on Safety FM here. I suspect a bad internet connection. Which means we can play the Route 80 song. Hold on.
Shadows of men who dug too deep left their scars where the earth does weep. Rushing wheels now pay the toll on a road with a fractured soul. No warning signs, just borrowed time. The hidden past now climbs the climb. A history that won't stay buried by the weight the earth was carried. Holes in the ground, they're pulling us under. Built on mines where greed did plunder. Route 80's a ghost, it's breaking apart. Abandoned dreams tearing highways hard. No warning signs, just borrowed time. The hidden past now climbs the climb. A history that won't stay buried by the weight the earth was carried.
Yes, we are back again. So here we have I-80 news. This was released on Friday. We have a press release from New Jersey DOT Traffic Advisory here. You know what? It's not letting me download this. It's a government document here, but it's not. Maybe I will do this, and then I will share. Hold on. capture. We'll open it up. And we'll do a screenshot here. Bear with me. All right, so here we have, why am I fascinated by this? One, we have a huge New Jersey listening thing here, all right, number one. And number two, again, this is not the only place where this is happening here, right? Again, they knew where these things were when they built the highways. Why didn't, you know? But what happens is when institutional memory leaves and everything else is from the New Jersey DOT traffic advisory, and you know, people forget about this stuff. I-80 westbound repairs taking longer than expected. All lanes in both directions still on schedule to reopen on June 25th. The permanent long-term repair of I-80 is progressing, but work to reopen two lanes on I-80 westbound. You should see some of those photos here. They basically have to build a bridge over this whole area. And so they're sinking piles, and then they're building a basically building a bridge over this. But work to reopen the two lanes on I-80 westbound is taking longer than expected in Wharton and Morristown area. All lanes in both directions are on schedule to reopen by June 25th. Okay, we're going to be holding you to that. Right, so summer solstice, June 21st. Jersey Shore, this is a regional nightmare now. Wait until summertime really hits. Right? And it's going to be hellish out here. Under the original schedule, I-80 westbound was expected to have reopened by this Saturday. It's now, that's May 4th, right? I guess that's Saturday. It is now expected that two lanes will be reopened by the end of May. The delay is due to the sonic drilling taking longer than expected. Maybe they're going to sonic burgers. I don't know. Sonic drilling creates less vibration and is necessary for installing micropiles in the Route 15 bridge on I-80 westbound. So they don't want to damage everything else. All piles are expected to be completed next week. Once the micropiles are installed, excavation will begin in preparation for the construction of the concrete slabs. So they're putting in piles and putting slabs over the top of them, essentially building a bridge, right, with this. I-80 eastbound work is progressing on schedule, and two lanes are expected to reopen mid-May. Excavation work in the eastbound site is nearing completion. And there is an I-80 project webpage. Okay, let's see what that is. Maybe we'll find something. I-80. Okay, so we put it into Google, and there is no I-80 project webpage coming up. Let's try this. Interstate 80. So they have one for Pennsylvania, not one for New Jersey, but in every state there's an I-80 reconstruction plan, it looks like. Webpage, NJ. You know what? We might be able to do a whole program on here. So let's do a share screen on this one. And we are done with Safety FM here. The New Jersey Department of Transportation closed the detour. That's the sinkhole right there. Pretty big one. 11 by 11, and then there is a 40 by 41 on the other side. Right? Looks pretty good. So Here we have establish an emergency detour, complete. Establish two-way traffic for residents, complete. Revise signal timing, complete. Conduct geotechnical tests, complete. Proactive drilling and grouting, complete. And what's going on, right? No milling and pavement, no reopening, and then ongoing repairs on east and west. So, you know, it's, you know, people are going over there with drones and stuff. So, I don't know, we'll figure this one out. We'll figure it out. Figure it out. That's all I have. I mean, I could do an hour or two here, so, on politics, but we're not going to do that tonight. One of these days, we're going to do a political program again with that. So, for Safety Wars, this is Jim Polzel. I will see you tomorrow, God willing.
The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the host and its guest and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the company. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are only examples. They should not be utilized in the real world as the only solution available, as they are based only on very limited and dated open source information. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the company. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored in a retrieval system, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, recording, or otherwise, without prior written permission of the creator of the podcast, Jay Allen.
Sulfur 29 CFR on time 1550. Welding, cutting, and heating in way of preservative coatings.